Before we start this midweek show, a little disclaimer. In the conversation Christine and I had, we got ourselves into, actually ended up touching on copyright things without intending to do so. And one of the things we talk about this week is, as part of a conversation about what to do with charts that you know that you finished and you no longer want or need, we got into a discussion, and part of that discussion involved copying charts, making working copies. And just want to be clear on that. We all do it, or at least the majority of us make working copies. I do it. And then when I'm done with a project, I just throw those away because I want to keep the original chart clean. But just want to make clear that it does break copyright laws if you copy those charts, even for your own use. When they say do not copy the chart, we often think that means don't copy it and give that copy to a friend, which it does mean. You can't do that. But it also means you just simply can't copy it. You're supposed to use the original piece according to the rules and regulations. But just wanted to be clear on that. We legally and all those things, we don't condone copying charts, but we all know that we do. People make working copies, and I don't think very many designers, if any, would complain about that. What they complain about is making copies, sharing them without other people buying a copy, the old Pinterest thing, those kinds of things. So just with that disclaimer, I wanted to share that, and then now we'll get on with the show. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stab cloth to make fine art. I made up another one.
Yes, and that's a pretty good one, especially because I've been stitching on a double layer of fabric, which sounds especially stabby. So I've actually, and I was doing something. So let me lay out the scene. I was stitching something that was a muslin with silk on top of it. And then it was
with silk on top.
Yeah. So, and then it was a full six strands of thread coming through. So you really got that pop coming through.
Ooh,
and,
I guess.
And my husband looked at me, he's like, what are you doing? Like, he was accusing me of, like, he's like, are you actually breaking something? I'm like, no, that was normal. That was supposed to do that.
Six strands through silk and wow. You must be using like an awl for a needle.
I'm finding tricks. I'm finding tricks to make that, but it was for a particular stump work technique thing that I had to get going. So, I've got some stuff brewing, Gary. I have been busy. I haven't been on the air, but I've started a couple of projects to keep my mental health going. So,
all right, stump work. All right, anxious to see
that.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, six strands. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That'll do it. That'll do it. Yeah.
It's noisy.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yes.
It's not like cross stitch.
Yeah, the silent. Yeah, yeah. We should rate them by noise level. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that'll be interesting. So we'll be looking for pictures. And yeah, it's been a long time since we've been able to get together here. Finally, I think the month of October.
It's been it's been a little bit rough between travel schedules and. You know, family obligations and all kinds of stuff going on. But yeah, but when we last spoke, I had said that I had a bunch of big projects going on and I wanted to start a couple of little things just to have going and that I missed doing surface embroidery. So I wanted to bring a couple of things in. I wanted to bring a thing in that was that style just to give my brain a little bit of a mental break from the counting of cross stitch and needlepoint. So that's kind of how that all got started.
Yeah. Well, it's weird having Trish Burr on Sunday.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I had purchased white work with color because I am just fascinated by those designs in there. And I have one that is a free one that I had actually transferred to linen, and then kept forgetting to buy a big enough hoop so I didn't have to put a crease in it. So now I have a hoop, and so I have it all kitted up, and I've got a couple trips coming up, one to Germany. Mm-hmm. And so that's going with me. So there'll be some embroidery stitching time. But after talking with her, I went out and, you know, because I asked her in the podcast, what was the best needle painting book for her, from her. And that's the needle painting embroidery, fresh ideas for beginners. So I went and bought that.
Yes. In fact, I'm trying to think if that's the book I'm working from. I have to look it up.
There's a bunch of birds and flowers in it. Yeah. More flowers, I think. Yeah, more flowers. No, you must have others. Yeah, you must have the other one. Is that the one you have?
I'm looking it up right as we speak because I got involved. Yes, that's exactly the one that I'm working from right now. But the one that you're working from, the white work, is such a different style.
And it's so cool.
You can't even – I don't even think you can compare the two, because one is white work that's got – it is exactly that. But I highly, highly, highly encourage you to pick up this other book and just try a couple of little things, because it's easy to follow, and it looks intimidating at first because it's so impeccably done.
She should do a sloppy one, just for
it. It is impeccably done, but I'll tell you, so this is what I did. So I'm doing two tiny projects. Both of them are in hoops no bigger than 5 inches, right? So one is a stump work piece, a Jane Nicholas stump work piece, and the other one is a Trish Burr bird from that book, from the needle painting for beginners book that you just mentioned.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the stump work one is just fun because I like that style, and I had an idea. So I'm adapting a design from that book a little bit. But then I was looking at the Trish Burr book, and one of the birds just kind of caught my eye. And I just love the idea of needle painting. I really enjoy doing it. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted that even stump work to a degree is a lot about technique. There's a lot of precision work to it. You know, it's a lot of, you know, you have to get everything exactly right, because if you don't, it looks sloppy. And, you know, needle painting is more to me like it's like painting, right? So right, there's yeah. a lot of, there's so much judgment, because it's all long and short stitch, right? And so there's so much judgment of when are you going to blend a color. So, for example, in this bird that I'm working on, and just in the back end of the bird, it's an area, it's a brown and blue bird, and the back feathers along the back side of the bird, there's an area, it's all browns, right? So, okay, a brown bird, no big deal. She uses 7 colors to get those feathers, right? And it's not clumsy. What it is it's seven colors that are next to each other, pretty much almost exclusively, on the DMC chart, right? So you, for most of the time, and you know, if you look at all the DMC colors lined up, a lot of times if you look at 800, 801, 802, they look almost identical. And if you hold the threads right next to each other, you can barely tell the difference. So when I first started picking them up, there's a little leap of faith the first time I'm doing this, for me anyway, because I look at them and I'm like, you can't even tell the difference. And when I had done a stump work piece before with 2 threads that were almost identical, it was the same thing. I'm like, my eye can barely distinguish between these 2 things. Why would I do that, right? And I'll tell you exactly why, because it makes it a lot easier, because you can blend.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. to go from 8 to 8, if you go, for example, let's say from 800 and you do some long and short stitch, and then you do 801 and long and short stitch to 802, it looks kind of seamless, and you get this beautiful gradual flow. If you go from 800 to 802, not gradual. So your stitches suddenly become glaring, right? So in doing this, you know, and I haven't done a lot of needle painting at all, really. So this is, I am the beginner. I am the person the book is written for, right? The bird is not an easy one to do. And there's a lot of this gradation that has to happen, not only to get from one end, you know, to get from light to dark, but also because you're trying to also distinguish between feathers that are adjacent to each other. So you have to make sure that when you go from light to dark across the bird, you're also creating a little bit of light and shadow so that there's still feathers, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So along the edge of the feather, it's going to be a little lighter, and along the shadow of the feather, it's going to be a little darker. So, you know, you have to think about how light would fall on the bird. So it's a great exercise because you're playing with different threads, and it's just single strand DMC. There's nothing fancy about it. I'm not using silk, not doing anything like that at all. But it's requiring a lot of different thinking about, instead of thinking about technique, instead of thinking about how I'm laying a thread or any of those things, I'm thinking about, what does a bird look like? What does a feather look like, right? How does light catch a feather? And what, you know, does it catch it on the edge, or does it catch it underneath? Like, how does that work? And it really makes you think about what your environment looks like. And then you find yourself looking at pictures of birds to see, like, is that really what it looks like? So you can copy her work exactly, but that's really difficult to do because it's so fine, and it's difficult because it's done so well. It's difficult to almost see the transitions of where things are going. So you really do have to sort of go back out to nature and look at, well, what does this flower really look like, you know, so that you can recreate it. Because if you understand sort of, so if you go to a flower, if you understand how a petal folds, you'll be able to better understand how the light is going to catch, and then understand, oh, I understand how that shadow is supposed to fall. And it makes a little bit more sense, at least to me anyway, how I'm supposed to do it. Because
so in your experience, limited that it is, in your experience, to sit there and stare at the picture that of Trish Burr's stitching just won't work. You just got to, like you said, have a leap of faith and just go for it and create what looks right.
Yes, for me, I'm doing both. I think that you could, and what I have learned with any of this kind of stitching with freehand embroidery type things, is if I follow a pattern to the T like that, things end up looking a little bit coloring booky, like they look stilted. And I'll follow a line, and instead of following, you know, I'll follow a line, and then the line might have been drawn a tiny bit crooked, and so it won't be graceful, as opposed to looking at what I'm stitching and following the line that it should be, where it's a graceful arch, right? So if I'm stitching a stem.
Okay, so,
So, you know, stepping back from it and looking at it and, you know, not only trying to stitch exactly what's in a book, but sort of putting the piece down and then coming back to it, or looking at it from a distance and saying, does that look right? You know, not only does it look like what the picture is, does it look like a bird?
You know? Right.
Because, right. You know,
if you really try to follow it rigidly, you get rigid. You get paint by number as opposed to just paint.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know that everyone else's experience is that way. But that's been sort of my experience with it, is that when I start thinking rigidly, it doesn't work as well for me than as when I start trying to think, like, you know, what would this really look like? And that seems to work a little better for me. That said, the instructions are excellent, and, you know, having all of those threads. So one of the best things that I did was my crazy, I'm going to buy a whole bunch of thread off of eBay, because in order to do this, because I really just wanted like a throwaway project, just something to do. And so I bought, a yard of silk fabric off, I forget where I might have bought it at Joann's, but I don't even think Joann's had real silk. I think I had to order it online, which is easy. Fabric.com has tons. And then muslin, I have, and once you buy a yard, that lasts you for a long time if you're doing small projects. And then I had gone online and I just wanted a sort of a stash of TMC just for things like this, when I just wanted to sort of noodle around. So I just for pennies on the dollar, and I mean not like DMC is that expensive anyway, but I bought the, the boxes that you can get that have the thread bobbins in them. So you've talked before about how your local club, when somebody passes on or doesn't want to, is out of the hobby, they donate their stuff and people will buy them. So if you go on eBay, oftentimes you can buy exactly that. Somebody's, clearing out somebody's house and they have their stash and they just want to sell off. So I bought two or three stashes for, $10 or $15 for a box, literally, five boxes of thread. So I have this gigantic library now of thread. So I very rarely will have to go and actually buy thread because I could just go into this library that I got for next to nothing, which was great. Because now it's basically, I don't have to invest anything in it. And the thread is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. So I, when I decided to do these, I just said, okay, let me see what's there. And for me, if the color isn't the, for the bird, I wanted the colors to be right, so I picked the right colors. But if it's a flower that I'm doing for stump work, well, if I'm putting a flower in, that's of my own design. If it's not the right color and if it's off by two, well, who cares? Because it's my flower. I can make it whatever color I want, right? So there. It cost me actually nothing because I had wire and I had all this thread to work with, and that was it. So yeah, I got these. So yeah, try those projects, but try one of the flowers and just go for it. And the more, this is what I'm learning, I think, from this bird is the more thread colors you use to get from one place to another, to get from light to dark, the smoother it is, and the more graceful the gradation will appear.
Well,
Even when
see,
it
this is.
seems, yeah, even when it seems like those colors look exactly alike, just do it.
Just trust them. Well, see, this is where I'm going to. I've been working my way through because the other book I bought, I'm now owner of three Trish Burr books in the span of what, a month. So that's okay. They're good. And I
They're
had an
excellent.
exchange with. I had an exchange today with Mary Frensky, a listener, and she's home recovering from a hip replacement. And Mary, hope that goes well. But based on the podcast, she bought two of Trish Burr's books, and we were commenting about how dangerous it is to be home recovering from hip replacement because you have time.
Well, I'll tell you, just get a whole bunch of thread and you could really lose yourself in doing. And they're nice because I love the little, you can pull little elements from these and just do little smalls,
Well, what I think I'm going to do in this Color Elements book, because understanding color is a real weakness for me. I have very little understanding. But in it, she has they're flower petals that she stitches in different colors. And so, one, two, three, four, five, six. So she has six colors in a little flower petal that can't be more than an inch high. And she has just pages and pages of them stitched in different colors. And so and that's the thing I got to do in my head is I got to say, all right, this is just throwaway stuff. So I'm going to draw out on some linen a bunch of petals, and then I'm just going to take DMC color and just practice that way. And just to see how I do and to gain a kind of try to gain a feel for it. and just do it on a scrap linen, you know, left over for something I cut out that was serious, you know, and there's always a section that you know, is small. So I'll just use that. And I think I'm just going to do that. And, you know, like you said, it's just practice at scrap, and then at least I'll gain some painting experience before I tackle one of the projects. Because
mm-hmm.
I just feel like we've talked about this 1,000 times. I've got to get past the rigid follow the rules thing and just let it flow. And that's a great
way to do it.
Yeah.
This is a great, and especially for flowers, and especially for you as a photographer, because you know, a rose can be whatever color you want it to be. A lily, there's right. 8 billion colors of lilies. So you get the shape from, you know, from a book, and then you can change that. You know, you can change the colors to however way you want to. And that's a great way to experiment, is to, you know, do that. Oh, you know, so another good way, there's in one of the Jane Nicholas books, she does pansies. And she just does a series of them. She does like 6 of them and all different colorways. And it's the same exact flower. It's very simple. And she does a red one. She does like a yellow and blue one. And it's just experimenting, just using different, you know, colors. And you mm-hmm. could really just look online at pictures of flowers. I'm sure you have in your own library, you know, millions oh, yeah. of pictures of flowers. And you just use those colors, you know, use, if you don't want to, like for me, my anxiety is more around shapes. So like drawing out the shape of the flower, unless it's something like stump work is easy because a petal is the shape of the petal and then you can sculpt it however you want. But to draw it on a fabric, that's where I think my insecurity would come through. I don't know that I would draw it to, that it wouldn't look like, you know, that it would look like the flower I was supposed to draw.
Yeah.
But you know, color, it, you know, flowers can be whatever colors you want, or they don't even have to be real colors. You can make it whatever color you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. And that's where why I got this color book is because mm-hmm. whenever I change colors in something or want to do it different from what's prescribed, I always have to have help because I'm terrible at figuring out what goes with what and what looks really ugly. And so I got this book hoping that it would help me just by practicing, help me see how these things go together. And I think it will,
mm-hmm.
but I've just got to play. And
yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where I've got to play, but I just got to take it with me. And whenever there's an idle moment, just haul it out you know, just throw some thread into the cloth to see what happens. And rather than a sit down formal session where I've got 3 hours to work on it, I just got to basically use it as doodle cloth and just make yes. something happen.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And just do that. And I think that's a great idea. And the other thing I would recommend is if you're going to use a fabric, just use something that's kind of dense. Like I said, I like to use, you know, muslin with linen with silk over it. I don't know that I would use linen unless it was a really dense thing, just because it's easier to, I find, for embroidery, this type of embroidery, the tighter the thread count, the easier it is to get the needle exactly where you want it, because everything is like satin stitch, right? You want where you're going around the edge of, how do I describe it? Where you're outlining the edge of something, you outline it, and then you're basically doing satin stitch around the edge. You want that edge to be perfectly smooth, and it's hard to do that unless it's a feather or something where that's, I haven't even broached that yet. it's a lot easier to do that if the fabric is tightly woven.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I have is tight, nice tight linen. So.
Tight, yeah,
I gotta play around. Yeah. But and
DMC
what
is great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing with all of her stuff is it's essentially all DMC. So there's not mm-hmm. this huge investment in silks and other exotic threads. You just, you know, and I've got a ton of DMC. I mean, it's just a matter of pulling out the colors because I Yeah, I probably have most of them anyway, and you know, just collected over the years. So that's just it. It doesn't throw away stuff. Literally, it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
Effectively, and you can have some fun and learn something. So I just gotta dig in. I'm inspired by Trish Burr.
and then you look at the birds, and you just can't help but want to stitch them because they're just so neat to do, to look
at. These birds, the way she executes them are just unbelievable.
They're spectacular.
Yeah.
They really, really are. Amazing.
Well, the birds, but also all the flowers too are just, they're just gorgeous. Yeah.
Yep. And that's where the color, I think and I think the color confidence, that is where I would go to the beginner's book first, because the colors there are easier, because you're going, you're not combining weird colors. Like if you look at the iris on the cover of the color confidence book, that's a tough one.
I wouldn't tackle that for a long time. Yeah.
But I would argue that if you bought, what I've started doing how if you do any kind of gardening at all, you get a billion different catalogs, still print catalogs from companies like Brex and things like that. A couple of them I've actually started keeping because they have really good photographs of flowers. So, and not only just for the actual photograph that I would, stitch the flower the way it is, but for exactly that, for the color reference, for things like irises and things like that, because irises have very strange and unique color combinations that you wouldn't see. So I started kind of having a collection of those because I look at them and say, I would never think to do that, but an iris did. So if an iris can do it, then
right.
Then now I have permission. And
you just gave an idea, hang on to those, because you can, one of those photos, scan it and pop it into Photoshop or equivalent and make a high contrast black and white out of it. And they're right there. You should have very close to a traceable picture that you can stitch.
You could.
Yeah. Should be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Haha. Now I want to. Now I'm thinking I might go get a couple of my flower photos and.
Yeah, why not?
Do the same thing. Sure. Should be able to do that. My own stuff right there. Yeah.
How cool would that be? And then you could frame the one next to the other.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
How beautiful would that be?
Bunch. I record in the bedroom here at the foot of the bed, and Marga's got a bunch of my flower shots in one in a 9-panel frame. And I see 3 of them right there that would convert very nicely. One of them is an iris.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ideas are flowing. Yeah. And I've got thousands and thousands of flower photos of all kinds. Yes.
Well, get cracking on there, because and there's a couple of other ones. There's her collection of flowers, long and short stitch embroidery, has some really unique. I mean, it's got some of the pansies and things like that, and calla lilies and things, but some of the more unique types of lilies and things that might give you some ideas of how to even approach them, because sometimes you look at these things and, they make sense. But okay, I know where to even start. And sometimes you look at them and you think, because they're so crenellated, the petals, you don't even know where to start, right? So it's worth looking at for guidance.
Yeah, because, some petals, if you're not really good at shading and, it can really look hokey, I'm sure, in a hurry. Yeah.
Well, how do you show that, the petal is folded? That's to me is where it gets tough to do, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean about shading, is how do you do that? And then I go back to Gay Ann Rogers talking about doing a face and getting the contours and the colors when you just have like one row of stitches to do one to achieve it. And that's
right.
Challenging. Yep. Oh, mm-hmm. boy. Now all kinds of ideas here. Because I need to start more projects.
These are smalls.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself. I tell
These
myself
are
a lot
smalls.
of things. Yeah.
And again,
Yeah.
these are, you don't have to do the whole, you know, an entire frame, that, because that was what I had to do. I looked at the Jane Nicholas, and, you know, it's a couple of the books have these beautiful projects that are, you know, large scale, where it's, you know, 16 different flowers in a piece all woven together. And
Yeah.
I had to exercise a little bit of restraint and say, no. How about a Christmas ornament? How about that?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about Trisha's stuff, just about, well, a vast majority of it, if you actually look at the size, is really quite small. So you're not dealing with great big lifelong projects here.
No, and scalable, right? So give yourself some space, too, if you want to.
Yeah. Well, I'm inspired. I'm inspired.
Good, good.
I just
I think you'll enjoy
actually
it.
do it.
Actually, I'm curious to see whether or not you'll enjoy it, because it's such a different, it's so different to do.
Yeah,
It really
yeah.
is, you know? Like, I
Yep.
find it very relaxing to do it once you sort of get in the rhythm. And then when you actually get something that blends and you get that beautiful gradation and it works, it's so rewarding, because for me, I look at that and I'm like, wow, that actually worked. You know, like it's something surprising to me. And so I'm looking forward to, like, doing one of the projects that's the stated, you know, this is the project that's in the book, and then, you know, venturing off into doing other things.
Right, right. Too many things. Okay. All right.
Just do small things.
Yep. That's what I need to do. All right. I'm inspired. We're going to give it a run. I have everything I
Good.
Need. I just got to actually sit down and do it. Yep. Yep. Mary Beasley posted on Stitch Mania something that has been in my head for a long time, and I'd not seen anybody actually address it. And I'm not really sure. I sent email to a couple of designers, did not hear back from them. But I'm not really sure how I feel about this, because what she's asking is, what do you do with charts that you're finished with? And, you know, do you give them away? Do you sell them? Or do you throw them in the trash? And, but the point she made, and this is the point, or the aspect of it that has bothered me when I see people give things, and I say that, yet I have been given several charts and gladly taken them. So, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm a participant. But the question is, and this was raised in the discussion, when you give them away, as opposed to throwing them away or keeping them, each time that happens, that's a sale that the designer could have had.
Right.
So, you know, does that matter? And that's not the right question to ask. But what does that mean? And then when a designer sees that, oh, somebody gave me this, or I'm gifting this to someone, or this was gifted to me, you know, does the designer go, oh, there's another $10 I didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? So I think it's an interesting thing, because the designers need to sell, because they need to make money so they can make more.
Right.
Otherwise they just give it up. So I was just glad to see it actually voiced in a discussion, because it's been in my head, you know, just what does that mean to the overall picture? And I'm just not sure.
Right. Because the alternative then is, you know, you don't want to sell it, because then, so let's put that one aside. If you sell it, then somebody's making money. It's not the designer. So that feels weird too, unless you're going to take that money and donate it to the club. So that's one thing, but then
somebody suggested selling it and then taking that money to buy more new designs.
Okay. That's, I think
so,
that's,
See?
There you go. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because the alternative is then if you say you can't sell it because, or you can't recycle it in any way, then it just sits on your shelf and does nobody any good. And I don't
Right.
think that's the right answer.
Right. But any other way is depriving the designer of a sale.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. I think maybe it's selling them and then turning that around into other hobby, funding. But I don't think that's a terrible answer.
No.
So then really there needs to be sort of a collective of, where do you do that? Because I know there's places on Facebook where people sell stashes of things, and I know charts are always a little bit funny because people feel like that's not the right thing to do. But if there was a way to do that, yeah, I don't, I mean, how do you police it? There's no way to do that.
Well, no.
But I think it's pretty much a guarantee. If somebody's taking the time to sell a chart, they're not going to take that money and use it for something else. These are diehard people.
Right. And see, and I'm sure that there is a group of people who don't give it a second thought. I'm done with it. I'm going to sell it, get some of my money back, and then pour it back into my hobby. However you might do that. And then there are people who, I mean, there's sites for getting rid of your stash. And so lots of people do that. And then people just gift it, a lot of the floss tubers. It's not unusual to see floss tubers. Should that be a word, floss tuber? I'm not so sure
I
that's a good
don't
word. Sounds kind of
know.
like a potato,
Yeah. But I think it's
Floss
a
tube
word.
people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I want to go with that. Floss tube people that, will have giveaways or whatever, and I'm pretty sure most of the time it's out of their stash. So I'm just not sh I just think it's an interesting question, and I'm not sure there's a clean answer.
Right, because we have no problem giving away stashes of supplies because the manufacturer's already made them and they'll just make more.
Right.
Somehow that doesn't, we don't have the same moral dilemma with that.
Right, but these designers who are artists, who are, I'm sure, in many cases, barely making any money off their work.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. That's where it becomes an issue, is that, this is a tough business to stay afloat in. And if you have people, here's what I think is the issue. I think that the number of people that are buying charts and stitching them and then reselling them is probably very tiny. I think the bigger offense is people buying charts and reproducing them. That would be very problematic. Right, because that's where
Yeah.
people are losing large sales. The one-off where I stitch a chart and then I sell it to you for half and then, take that money and then buy another chart from that same designer, that's probably a lesser part of the problem.
Oh yeah, the people who are basically infringing on copyrights, yeah, that's a whole
Yeah.
another kettle of fish, and those people just need to be lined up and smacked. But that whole Pinterest ripoff thing, yeah, that's a whole, yeah. But yeah, just if legitimate hobbyists who are willing to pay for what they stitch, and are supporting designers. And that's what we need to have happen, to have plenty of designers being creative.
Right.
So then, what does that really hurt? Is it a good thing? Because you can make an argument, well, if I gave it to someone and they really like that designer, then there's a good chance they'll go buy their own copies of other designs that that person did. And you can argue it a whole bunch of different ways, but it's just something that has bugged me. I'm not sure how to think about it.
I think it's a couple of things. It's like any book. you know, anybody can borrow a book or can copy a book, and we don't worry too much about that. And their books, you know, in fact, book publishers, if you think about knitting, like Debbie Bliss Books or things like that, you know, you can check them out of the library, and that's fully expected that you're going to use those. You just can't sell the things that you make from those books.
Right.
So that's acceptable, but they're probably making more money from the book. So then maybe the thing becomes, if the making of charts is so, is if that business model is so delicate, then maybe there has to be another addition to the business model. So one of the things that I found, and this was just accidental actually, was I was looking for supplies actually for the stump work project I was working on. And sometimes there's weird like things that you need, like, you know, weird kinds of wire or fibers or stuff like that. So I was looking online to see if I could find something. And it turns out that J. Nicholas sells kits for the things in her book. So if you happen to be working on a particular, I don't know, project, you know, let's say a book has 16 projects in it, she'll sell kits for each of the 16, or maybe half of them, or however many. And basically it's just the project to kit it up. And it's nice. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice thing. And if I lived in Australia, I'd probably take advantage of that, because for a lot of times it's, you know, you don't want to have to buy a whole package of beads when you need one bead to make a dragonfly, right? So for her, it's an extra source of income. And for a stitcher, it's a great way to just, you know, get the materials you need and not more, and not end up with a closet full of things like we all do. So maybe part of the designer's dilemma then is, yes, you know, charting is difficult, and that's part of it, but maybe kitting charts is a way to supplement income. That doesn't solve the problem. But yeah, I don't know that there is a good solution to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to think about. And I think it's something to be aware of if you're truly conscious about making sure that we keep our designers, just like it's something to think about if you're truly conscious about making sure we keep our local needlework stores.
Yeah.
Is to support them.
I think the majority of us are respectful and appreciative of the people that are providing these things for us, because we get tremendous enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
That said, I don't know that anybody would want a chart that I've worked in, because there's so many notes and marks, and I know yours are not like this. Yours probably look
like
they came out of.
I've seen your charts.
Yeah,
I've seen your charts. I don't want them.
No, you would never want one of my charts, because I work my charts. They have notes. I've written down. My Sarah Brazier was the first one that I actually photocopied and made several photocopies so that I could write in them and then have copies of the copies so that I could make good notes of my notes. because my other charts, I write right in the charts, you know, what I'm doing and, you know, especially if I have to count things and stuff like that, I mark up my charts fully, because I'm not going to stitch them again.
Yeah.
Probably. So why would I drive myself crazy trying not to mark up a chart?
Well, you want my charts, because
right.
When I'm done with them, they're like they came off the store shelf. So.
Right. But then I don't have this moral dilemma of, you know, how am I going to worry about, you know, who's going to get my chart and whether I can sell it or not, because nobody's going to want them. So.
Okay, so there's the answer. Mark the hell out of your charts, and then nobody will want them. And then it's just, yeah, okay, that solves the problem.
It's a
okay.
chart. It's a chart that's been loved.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
It's yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's an answer. That's something to ponder.
No, and part of that is just an inexperience. I think that, you know, with certain things I've learned too, that there is value to photocopying the chart for your own use, because then if you mark up a chart as you're using it and then you screw it up, it's difficult to unmark it, especially if you work in pen. Not that I've ever done that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Working
yeah,
it.
See, I copy them.
Yeah.
I either don't mark on them, or like Sarah Prazier, I've made copies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can mark out, you know, so I'm Xing out what I finished to keep up, because it's such a monstrous thing. So that I made copies of. But normally I just go by the chart and don't mark it. So
I like to mark certain. Well, and some things I have to, because I need the guidance sometimes. Well, I mean, if I'm working at Jessica, that's 40 stitches by 40 stitches, I'm marking that thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes I think I should mark my charts more, because I know that, you know, a lot of times it'll be 2 or 3 days before I'll get back to something I'm working on. And then the first 15 minutes are just reorienting myself in the piece,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that I've actually counted correctly and all that. So if I marked them, I'd probably help myself. I need to think this through a little more, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But man, I don't want to mark those charts. Nope.
You know what you could do? You could get a plastic overlay, and then you could use a dry erase marker.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that's not crazy at all.
No. I think I'll copy them and then mark them. Yeah. I think that's what I'll do. Okay. Once again, self-reflection. I got to alter my ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. That's enough studying of my mind. We're going to call it right here. Sunday, Kathy Ray, owner of Needle in a Haystack.
Oh, great.
Yes. And now Kathy was a computer programmer and a gospel singer, and started this business on the side, was working full-time as a computer programmer and manager of computer programmers while the shop was running. And then the part I want to learn is, where did she say, enough of this, I'm going to go run a needlework shop?
That I've spent a lot of money at.
Yes, I've shipped more than my share of dollars there. And mm-hmm. So most interested to hear that story, which tells you it's not yet been recorded, to hear that story. And then she has some unique things in that shop, like the Alba Maxima linen that Mary Corbett recommends. Yes. That's where I get that, is from Needle in a Haystack. And she has a lot of unique things, different stitching techniques that she supports, gold work, those kinds of things. So be able to explore that with her. So it's going to be interesting to see just what all goes on. Plus, I got to hear about gospel singing on, you know, touring with a gospel group.
Yeah.
Got to hear about that. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if I can get her to sing.
Well,
you think we could get her to sing? Probably not.
I don't know.
I'm not. Well, I don't think we'll try. No.
Okay.
But maybe, you know, maybe find out if there's a recording somewhere of her. But that's pretty cool. You know, that, you know, and it really illustrates there's so many people in this hobby with such diverse backgrounds. And how would you sit down and put together gospel singer, computer programmer, and needleworker?
I don't know.
Don't know that I'd put that one together. So that'll be interesting. Kathy Ray, Needle in a Haystack. And yes, that's a good place to get stuff, by the way. Mm-hmm. She has a ton of stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Very well.
Thanks for listening. Kathy Ray Sunday. We'll be back Wednesday.
Take care.